Hello and welcome to the Gamehouse College Sports Show. I am Joe. With me is Kyle, as always, here to talk about what was one of the crazier weekends of college football this past weekend for week two and also preview week three. Kyle, how you doing?
Doing well. I'm excited for a little more action this week.
Yeah, absolutely. I was very surprised about some of the results this week. We're going to get to those in a little bit here, but first we're going to talk about Nebraska firing head coach Scott Frost, something we had highlighted very early in the season because they had that week zero game in Ireland. But this weekend they lost to Georgia Southern, who was a triple option team that hired Clay Helton, who runs more of like an air raid offense, and they lost big time to him. This is a game they should not lose as Nebraska, and decided to fire him 3 weeks before the buyout for his contract would go down by like half, or like $7.5 million or something like that. So they decided it was just going in such a bad direction they were going to fire him right now, even though usually I'm of the opinion you don't make those decisions mid-season, or at least this early in the season. Mikey Joseph's going to take over as the interim head coach, Kyle, but we're here to talk about potential replacements. And I've been told about, you know, well, Luke Fickell or Mark Stoops, but I think if you're in this position, you got to look at more realistic candidates. Why would either of those guys want to leave for Nebraska? I think maybe guys like Matt Campbell, PJ Fleck have been thrown out there. Lance Leopold at Kansas, who just got a big win this weekend. Those are some guys. Jim Leonard, the defensive coordinator for Wisconsin. I mean, where's the upward mobility there? Because Paul Chryst is not going anywhere anytime soon as head coach. So, there's some of the short list of candidates. But I think for Nebraska, yes, you have money, and yes, you got that Big Ten money coming in for the TV contracts. But also, are you going to get someone like Luke Fickell or Mark Stoops? I'm not so sure you are.
Yeah, I have this argument every year because the SEC always gets new positions, and people always say, "Oh, they'll hire Luke Fickell or they'll hire Mark Stoops or whatever." It's because of these visions people have of these programs being small time and not big enough for these coaches to maintain them, or they're not going to pay them enough, or whatever it is. And every year it's the same story. These guys end up staying put. I think Luke Fickell's holding out just maybe for Ohio State and not much else. I mean, I don't know where else he's really going to want to jump to. You see, he's jumping into a new power conference in a way, in the Big 12, and they have a little more staying power now. I don't see why you'd want to leave that. He's proven you can make the playoff, and he's done it without a leader recruiting. He's done it just by coaching, and now he's going to have a little more momentum behind his back, hopefully get some better recruits. I just don't know why he'd want to leave where he's building. I believe his kids are also in school here in Cincinnati, so, I mean, that kind of helps a little bit. either way, though, Mark Stoops, I kind of see that as the same thing. I don't see why he would want to leave. I know there's a little flare up in the recent month or so with the basketball program and just not being a football school or whatever. I know he kind of ruffled some feathers with that, or his feathers got ruffled, but I don't think that means he's leaving or anything. But as far as Scott Frost getting fired, a little surprise. I know we all brought it up in our group chat in week one when they lost to Northwestern kind of in an embarrassing fashion. I mean, he kind of blew that game away with the onside kick and then just got absolutely outcoached by the Fitz. And I think I initially said absolutely they're going to fire him if he trips up again. Like, next mistake, he's gone. But you, and I believe Greg, you mentioned that, like, there's that buyout if you wait 6 weeks, and I was pretty sold on that. But I think a mistake like this, it's hard to overlook. But, boy, that's hard to eat that bullet. I mean, it's a lot of money you just kind of threw away just for if the season's – well, I guess the season isn't entirely over. I just don't know where else you really go from here unless you think they're really going to win the Big Ten. Because obviously it's still on the table technically, but I don't know if Kirk might think it'll still happen. I don't know if I do. But as far as the coaching search, I my gut wants to say it'll be out of conference. I don't know if you're going to see a Big Ten switch like PJ or anything, but I think maybe Matt Campbell. I mean, I could see that happening. Leopold's in, what, his second year? I would be – and they didn't win anything last year. I'd be interested to see if they actually offer him. I feel like I don't know if he's proven enough yet. I think he would jump at it for sure. I mean, why would you stay at Kansas? But I don't know if that's going to be a guy. Who do you have at the top of your list?
So I think what people are saying, right, so like, yes, you definitely reach out to Luke Fickell. You reach out to Mark Stoops in terms of like, this is your list you're reaching out to. And I think Matt Campbell comes right after that because, I mean, kind of the same thing. He doesn't get those big star recruits. He develops well. He wins at Iowa State, which is historically hard to win at. I do not have any of those threes leaving for the job. I think Matt Campbell's the most likely, but he is such a program builder. I don't think he wants to go to Nebraska, where maybe the boosters have a little bit of unreal expectations. I mean, that's kind of tough. So I would first call would be those three. After that, I'm thinking you call PJ Fleck and just say, hey, you may have maxed out at Minnesota. We can give you a boatload of money. You love rowing the boat. We'll give you a boatload of money. I think you call him after that. He's had the 10-11 win season a couple years ago, but what more are you going to do at Minnesota? Other than that, I think Jim Leonard, the defensive coordinator for Wisconsin, would be a really good hire. He's done a really good job every year. They always have guys leaving for the NFL, and he always retools it. He played in the NFL. I think he could be a good fit. And I do think Lance Leopold, I think he could be if Kansas, because they're not going to hire someone tomorrow, right? If Kansas comes out and wins like three Big 12 games this year, which is definitely possible after they upset West Virginia, he might be your guy. He did really well at Buffalo. He's doing well at Kansas. I think you have to look at that. And those are all those guys, like Matt Campbell, all those guys are recruiting the same areas of the country too. So I think those are good fits. My only thing is, like, we thought Scott Frost was going to be a good hire, right? A couple years ago, we're like, you know, Scott Frost did this at UCF. Man. And I'm starting to think, you know, Kyle, and you know this, Kyle, like some of the programs that you're more familiar with in the SEC, sometimes it's not always about the head coach, and sometimes it's about the program. And I do think while Scott Frost made some big mistakes, including some onside kick decisions, there's also, I think, that program needs to set some boundaries. Like when Nick Saban got to Alabama, he told the boosters, you got to chill out, like let me do my thing. And so I do think they have a chance to get a pretty good coach, maybe not the guys they're thinking about, but at the same time, they have to fix some things programmatically before things can really be fixed.
And to your point on Matt Campbell, kind of in my head, I think there's a window opening in the Big 12 now. I mean, I think he sees that. And like you said, he's a program builder, so there's opportunity. Mm-hmm. Oklahoma and Texas are leaving. The face of the Big 12 is wide open. Yeah, Baylor's there. Oklahoma State's there. But they haven't had staying power for a decade or so. I mean, Oklahoma State's always good, but they aren't winning the conference every year like Oklahoma was. So there's definitely a window there now for Iowa State. Whereas Nebraska and the Big Ten, I mean, the Big Ten West is wide open, but you're still going to have to play with the elites of Ohio State, Michigan, et cetera. And I think that might be a little more attractive to Matt Campbell to be staying in the Big 12. I would kind of say the same for Fickell, but he's already at the head of that, and he can just be the head of the Big 12 as well. Stoops a little different because I don't know if they're ever going to have – they're never going to be running the East all the time. But I definitely think Matt Campbell might be a little more attractive to stay in the Big 12. But one more coach we didn't mention that might be worth Nebraska taking a look at, but they might want to look at Bo Pelini too. I know he had a few good years in the Big Ten and Big 12 back in the day. Some red school, I can't remember who it was, but yeah, I think that might be worth a call.
You know, maybe it's Nebraska coming to terms with, hey, maybe going 8-4, 9-4 every year like Bo Pelini did. Maybe that's what they are.
Hard to complain about that. I mean, you cap out about 11 wins every so often, but you know, there could always be that one year with the playoff expanding too. Of course, they didn't know about that back then, but definitely could be it's not a bad thing to have as your head coach of the program.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's no excuse for why they fired him. There's no excuse why the last several years they have not been able to go to one Big Ten West championship since, what was it, Nebraska, Wisconsin, back when it was Legends versus Leaders, not East versus West, like way back when. They haven't done that since. Like
the OG days.
Yeah, they haven't done it since. Like if Iowa can go to these Big Ten championships, if Northwestern, if Wisconsin, we know Wisconsin's a solid program, but there's not the elite team in that division. If they can't get to one,
if Northwestern can do it twice, I agree, then there's no reason Nebraska should be able to do it. And they deserve every little bit of this karma that's happening right now, in my opinion. But
yeah, I mean, they just, I think their expectations are too high. It's like those programs we talk about, like Tennessee, maybe their expectations are too high for what they were. It's going to take a while to build, and it's going to take maybe boosters not being over involved, which is very, very tough. Like, you know, there are people who wanted Nick Saban fired after he lost to UL Monroe in his 2007, right? Like, it's just,
yeah,
it takes a while.
Inaugural year.
Yeah, it takes a little time. And, you know, I'm not saying Scott Frost should get more time, but I do think it's not totally his fault. I think it's total program thing. All right, that's our talk about Nebraska and Scott Frost. We're going to recap a wild week two, Kyle. It's some upsets, some FCS over FBS upsets. I think there was like four of those. There's some big top 25 upsets. There's some teams that should not have lost, and we're going to go through it all. So we're going to start with Texas and Alabama. The spread for this one ended up being around 21 points in favor of Alabama. Texas showed out. I mean, I know it was first true road non-conference game for Alabama in a while. They look sloppy. They had plenty of penalties, late hits, holdings, everything. It was really, really bad. The worst game I think I've seen a Nick Saban team play, at least in terms of discipline. And Texas was ready, man. Quinn Ewers was throwing the ball around the yard. He gets hurt. That kind of doesn't go their way. Second half, they have a safety that doesn't go their way. Bryce Young's shin was kind of down when he threw the ball out of the end zone. Could have flipped the game there too. Easy to blame the refs on that one as well. But at the same time, we said this, Kyle, like, yes, like a win would be awesome for Texas, but this is a measuring stick, and they measured up really well despite Alabama just not playing well at all.
Yeah, I guess the mystery behind why Alabama doesn't play true road games is now answered. This is why, I guess, they don't compete as well. I mean, I believe they were the last SEC school to play a true road game in the non-conference. And Texas took it to them. Like you said, Quinn Ewers carved him up a bit. Bryce Young has not looked good this season. He didn't make too many mistakes necessarily, but it's just not really playing with Heisman numbers. I believe his yard per attempt towards the very bottom of the SEC too. I know Texas is week two opponent. Not everybody had to play Texas, but they got a cupcake week one. There wasn't much going on. Just not a very effective game by Alabama. But win's a win. You know, great teams find a way to win no matter how it looks. So they got that going for them. But, yeah, I think, like you said, Texas shaping up to – not going to say be back, but maybe be a factor in the Big 12 for the first time in a while. I mean, Kansas won too, so they'll have to watch out for that, but they might be able to beat Kansas this year. I think, you know, some bright days ahead. But like you said, if they had Quinn Ewers, this could have been a different story.
Oh, absolutely. I think they probably would have won. I mean, it's tough to say, but then they put in Hudson.
He was in a groove.
He was. They put in Hudson Card, the backup, who I think looked good as well. Not as good as Quinn Ewers, but he looked good, and he was playing injured too. So I think the ceiling for this team, they can win the Big 12. They can. I mean, if they can play Alabama that close, even at home, they can win the Big 12. There's not much competition there. And then you go into next year with Quinn Ewers coming back, because obviously he's not eligible for the draft. And there's a lot of potential for this team moving forward. I don't know. Going into the SEC will be tough for them too because of the depth thing, and they have had troubles recently beating teams they should beat, like Kansas. That's stuff you can't do in the SEC.
Right.
All right, so Alabama survives their first matchup, their first non-conference matchup in a long time. Marcus Freeman starts 0-3 as Notre Dame's head coach. Marshall goes into South Bend and beats Notre Dame. This is a offensive failure, pretty much. Tommy Reese called a bad game, the offensive coordinator for Notre Dame. The offensive line didn't block. Tyler Buchner, the quarterback we talked about, you know, he has some scrambling ability, but he fell apart in the second half against Ohio State passing-wise, and he didn't pass that well in this game either. So the defense is still good. That's what Marcus Freeman's good at, and I don't think the sky is necessarily falling in terms of, like, long-term hiring stuff. But this was a good wake-up call for them, and they definitely got to get it back on track, because if you're Notre Dame, you can't be losing to teams like Marshall, and the next team we're going to talk about, they can't be losing to the team they lost to either. So there's lots of teams out there like that this year.
Yeah, this was definitely a bit of a surprise. quarterback troubles again for Notre Dame. I've kind of not been impressed with their quarterback play, even under Brian Kelly in recent years. And then, of course, the injury doesn't help. But I think they got a little more to do on defense as well. It looks like Marshall kind of ran for at will on them a little bit. I mean, it was a little one-sided offense, and Marshall was still able to figure it out. A little shocking, though. Yeah, no, like Notre Dame 0-2. When's the last time that's happened?
They said it was a long time. I don't remember what the date was exactly. Like, it was so oh my god.
Which president?
This is the first coach to start 0-3 like ever at Notre Dame. So it's gonna be tough. But
it's not an easy job. I mean, we've talked about that.
Yeah, it's not always easy to recruit. Not easy with the scheduling as well. I mean, it's. It's tough, and Notre Dame lost, I don't know if you know this, but they're 0-1 all-time against Sun Belt teams. That was the first time they ever played a Sun Belt team, so that's
how long has Marshall been in the Sun Belt?
This year.
I was going to say, that's a Conference USA team, right? I mean,
yeah. Well, we're not going to talk about this game when we pick games later, because it's not that good of a game, but I do think they beat Cal this week. I think they get back on track. They have too much talent, and Cal's not that great, and Drew Pine stepping in. I honestly thought Drew Pine, they had three quarterbacks who played last year. I think Drew Pine played the best. He's kind of a shorter guy. He has a weak arm, but he knows the offense will spread the ball around. And it seems like they like him a lot as a head coaching staff. They just like the opportunity to run the ball with Tyler Buchner more, and that's going to get you sometimes when they can't complete those passes.
Yeah, I remember watching. I think it was Wisconsin. Maybe it wasn't. I can't remember who they were playing. But quarterbacks were going down, and Drew Pine ended up coming out, and I honestly thought he looked the best. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, maybe it was Notre Dame. I can't remember who it was, but. Yeah, I'm glad. I mean, I think Pine's an adequate backup. That's fine. just limit your mistakes. I mean, that was a bad game. They're giving it away all over the place.
Yeah, and they do have some tough games coming up. So just, you know, if Drew Pine can get them to 7-5 and at least salvage the season a little bit, not from where they were expectations-wise, but at least salvage the bowl game and get them to where that is, that's something that you – that's not a bad job as a backup.
Because I think Marshall was one of the easier ones on the schedule, so it's not like it gets easier from here.
Oh, yeah, BYU, Stanford, USC, they got plenty coming up.
Yeah.
All right, Kyle, I'm going to enjoy talking about this one. I know you are, too. Appalachian State beats Texas A&M. And this isn't just like, yes, it was kind of close in the scoreboard, but Appalachian State dominated this game. They ran the ball all over Texas A&M. Their defense played really well. We have had discussions about Jimbo Fisher, and his offensive play calling is stuck in the dinosaur age. Like, he just doesn't like do motion. He doesn't do any of this stuff to open up players, and he throws out Haynes King, and Haynes King does not look like the guy either. They have other guys on the roster. They have a freshman. They have Max Johnson, who transferred in from LSU. They haven't made changes yet, and you know, it's App State. Like, App State is not like a team you sleep on anymore, right? Like, they've been in the FBS for several years. They're always good in the Sun Belt. I don't think they can even use the excuse of like, oh, you know, like, hey, we weren't like ready for Appalachian State. They just took North Carolina to the wire, and I know North Carolina doesn't have as much talent on the roster as Texas A&M, but just an absolute embarrassing performance by A&M in this one.
Absolutely. I mean, weren't we just a week ago talking about the 20-year anniversary or whatever it was of them shocking the Michigan Wolverines and whatever year that was? 15. I think it was 20 years ago. I don't know. But like this,
15, yeah.
This was, okay, 15. It's, yeah. I was obviously on people's radar. Like, this wasn't a surprise. It's Appalachian State. You got to be ready. And they took it to UNC last week and almost won. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've had this conversation. I don't believe in Jimbo Fisher. I don't think he's got what it takes. And here's another perfect example. I didn't think Haynes King was the guy either. And Devin Achane not getting a lot of touches. He was actually effective. I don't know if there was an injury there. Honestly, I didn't get to watch the entire game. But this was the same problem I had last year with Texas A&M and his play call was he forces the pass game a little too much. I think he did that with Kellen Mond too. And he doesn't allow the running game to just do what it does. And last year, they were playing us, Ole Miss, for game day, and they were absolutely just tearing us up on the ground, and he insisted on throwing the ball, and it was what their undoing was in the end. But, yeah, 14 points against this is a Sun Belt team, am I right?
Yep, you got it.
Against a Sun Belt team. Not getting it done. And I didn't think they looked good last week against Sam Houston State either. I thought the defense looked great. Against Appalachian State, maybe not as much, but it was enough to win for sure. So a little unacceptable again. I don't know how they're feeling down there with Jimbo and everybody, but at least they got that $1 million class. But
well, a lot of the classes, it seems like everything's falling apart. There's freshmen doing stupid things on their campus. Their Yell videos getting DMCA'd on Twitter because people keep on reposting it. There's people who are canceling their visits to Texas A&M. Stuff is hitting the fan, and it should, because, again, Appalachian State is a very tough team. But if you have all these recruits that you have, I mean, if you have all this talent on the roster overall, you should not be losing to Appalachian State. And I will say Appalachian State had a perfect game plan, and they killed the clock. They ran the ball well. Don't forget, this is a team that had 2,000-yard rushers last year, so it's a good team. But I just can't – like, I can't get over the ineptitude of how bad it is with Texas A&M. No motion. They don't run the ball when they should. When they do throw, they only allow quarterbacks to read about half the field most of the time. It limits what you can do as an offense. He needs to give up play calling duties at the very least. And get someone who can be more innovative, because they're just not going to win big in the SEC. The one time they did was like Kellen Mond's senior year, where he just kind of made stuff happen with his legs a little bit too. So it doesn't happen unless they have a guy like that. And I'm not the biggest Kellen Mond fan or anything, but like he was at least better than what they have right now. So.
Oh yeah.
All right, so those were two of the more shocking upsets. Texas A&M took like the biggest tumble in AP poll history. That's kind of fun. And let's go to Tennessee and Pitt, one of the 3:30 games. This one had some juice to it. They played it last year. Pittsburgh, I think, put up a good fight despite like how much talent they lost from last year's team. They took this one into overtime. Tennessee was able to get the win. Very impressed with Tennessee and Hendon Hooker, who threw for 325 yards and two touchdowns. Cedric Tillman, their wide receiver, one of the best and most proven wide receivers in the SEC with nine receptions, 162 yards and a touchdown. That's a game on the road that I think you're happy to get out of there with a win. I think Tennessee could have played a little bit better, but I think just, you know, just tough game.
Yeah, like you said, Pittsburgh's actually kind of impressed me so far. I guess now that West Virginia didn't do so well week two, maybe that a little bit of an asterisk or whatever. But, you know, they found a way to win, and they competed right to the very end here against a good Tennessee team. And Hendon Hooker's doing the things that we think that we thought Hendon Hooker was going to do. I think we both had him in our top five, maybe even top three. And he once again performed. I mean, he played the game that needed to be played in order to get this win on the road. And this is a good win for Tennessee. You know, they get a little revenge from last year, and Pittsburgh's no sham. I mean, I think that's a good win. It's going to look good at the end of the season. Keep an eye on the Vols. I hate to say it, I do, but they're looking good for right now.
Oh, absolutely. That's a team as you know, people get more farther into the season. I think the SEC East could be pretty crazy. I think Tennessee could be one of those teams that maybe pulls off an upset here or there. All right, we have Washington State and Wisconsin. This is a game I thought Wisconsin would be able to wrap up pretty easily just by running the ball and taking care of it. But Washington State's defense played really well. They held Wisconsin to 14 points. Cameron Ward is a quarterback I had talked about and written about this offseason as a guy who transferred into Washington State from Incarnate Word at the FCS level, and he can run it, he can throw it. He didn't even play his best game. He really didn't play that well. And the defense stepped up, and they got some stops. And I think if Cameron Ward does end up playing is what a lot of people expect him to, Washington State can kind of make some noise in that Pac-12 North.
Yeah, the 2-0. I mean, Washington State's back, baby. Cam Ward's taking them to the title game, I'm telling you.
He might.
you said it, though. He did not have a good game, and they still found a way to win. I don't know if that's Washington State's defense or Wisconsin's bad offense. Honestly, I've thought for the last few years Wisconsin's offense has been pretty subpar. I mean, very boring, not very much going on, and just downright boring. Well, I said boring already, but just downright stagnant at times. Graham Mertz, I've never really been too impressed with, so he has kind of mediocre day, but still shocking to lose to Washington State. I mean, that's not an easy place to go win, and I would think Wisconsin's the better team, but it would be different if Cam Ward had like a huge game and we're just like, wow, that's crazy. But like, he didn't. He had two picks. He didn't look that good. But, you know, find a way to win, I guess. So, what, like 250 offensive yards here? It doesn't look very good. Looks like a typical Big Ten game, to be honest.
But. No, it was. I'm impressed. Like, most of the time, Washington State doesn't always match up physically with some of the teams who, like, they're an air raid team, right? So, like, they don't match up physically. They matched up physically in this game, and I think they're in the win. And, Wisconsin, I mean, you're right. The offense has looked pretty bad for a while. Graham Mertz has not taken the step forward. I get that he's been your top-rated recruit, quarterback recruit that they've ever gotten, but he's had all this time to get better. He just hasn't, and I know their backup quarterback is out for the season too, so they don't really have many options. But they got to figure out something in the future, because if they want to be one of these teams who makes the playoff on a consistent basis, then they need to figure out how they're going to be able to run the ball or get someone to open up the offense a little bit. All right, we have Houston and Texas Tech. Houston was ranked in the top 25. Texas Tech was at home for this one. This is another one that went into overtime. Texas Tech had backup quarterback Donovan Smith throw for 351 yards, two touchdowns, and they were able to get the win in overtime, double overtime here. So I think beating Houston is really, really big for a couple reasons. Texas Tech, I think, has a tough couple games coming up here with NC State. I think Texas maybe in the next couple weeks too. Houston was one of those teams who were vying for a New Year's Six Bowl, so it does mean something, and we'll see if either of these teams can kind of get things going after this.
Yeah, this is a Big 12 rivalry game next year, I think, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, no, I was impressed with Texas Tech again. You know, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, but they're the ones that fired their coach halfway through last season.
Yep.
Despite being like 5-2 or whatever it was. And, you know, they didn't finish well, but they got a big game, a big win in the bowl game. They looked good. They looked fired up. So it looks like somewhat of a rebuild, but going in the right direction early, which is good. You know, that's a good win against Houston. I believe Houston lost a lot from last year, so maybe a little bit of a bounce back to reality for them. But, you know, good win by Houston, like you said. Tough schedule coming up. So that's going to be a needed one.
Absolutely. All right, the game I'm most excited to talk about, Kyle, Kentucky and Florida. Hand up on both of us for this. We talked about Anthony Richardson being bad at the start of the year. Then we complimented him against Utah, and then he looked really bad against Kentucky. Give some credit to Kentucky's defense there. They have a really good linebacker room and some freshmen who stepped up. But he was very inaccurate. They couldn't move the ball consistently. They took an early lead, and then they tried to throw a dump-off pass, and Kentucky's linebacker picked it off, ran it back to the house. That kind of changed things. Early in the game, Florida's defensive line got to Will Levis. They shored that up. Will Levis was able to help them get the win in the Swamp. They've won 3 out of the last 5 against Florida, I believe. They've won the last 2 against Florida. A lot of people, like Roman Harper on SEC Network, were calling Kentucky soft. And you know what? They might not always be the greatest team, but I would not call Mark Stoops' team soft. So now it got me pretty confident for the rest of the year. Yes, some tough games, but I'm pretty happy with the result.
Yeah. I'm glad our AAA team is working out really well. You know, Keedron Smith, another guy from the majors. We had to drop him down to the AAA, and he's showing up big for you, too. No, I'm kidding. That was a big play. I love watching our guys succeed, especially at a place like Kentucky, because honestly, that's probably my second favorite team in the East. But yeah, you know, what's the me or the GIF or whatever? They are who we thought they were.
Yep.
That's how I'm feeling right now about AR-15, because that was an ugly game. That was not good. But yeah, I mean, good on Kentucky without their best player too. You know, Rodriguez isn't in there. I've always thought Kamasie Smoke was great. I think I might have said that before. I think that's a very good backup, maybe arguably one of the best ones in the SEC. Mm-hmm. Tons of experience. He runs it well. He did well in this game. A little bounce back to reality for Florida this week too. They came in favored. Kentucky leading the SEC East. Look at that. I'm real excited. They got another big matchup in 2 weeks. So,
yeah, Kentucky. You're right. Kentucky has Youngstown State in the Northern Illinois, and then they have Ole Miss.
3 weeks.
Yeah, and then they got Chris Rodriguez coming back for that one after whatever the suspension was for that we've talked about. That could be huge. That game could be really huge for both programs. And I'm really impressed. And you're right, Kavassier Smoke, second half, like first half, he was running into a brick wall of a Florida defensive line. Second half, he turned it on and played really well. And you're right, you can have a good 1-2 punch when Rodriguez comes back. And very excited to see what the team can do in the next couple of weeks here. All right, the next game we're going to talk about here, we have Baylor and BYU. This was one of the better matchups of the weekend in terms of ranked teams playing each other. Went into overtime. This was a late night ESPN game. This kept the Saturday going. BYU was without two of the receivers we mentioned on the preview of this, and they were able to gut it out and get a touchdown in overtime, and Baylor was not. So that's how the game ended. Jaren Hall played pretty well despite not having the wide receivers. He had 261 yards, 1 touchdown. Baylor's offense really was disappointing. Blake Shapen only threw for 137 yards. Their defense played pretty well. I mean, you hold a team like BYU that has some offensive firepower and a good offensive line to 26 points when you play through an overtime. I mean, that's pretty good. But Baylor needs to figure out that offense for Big 12 play. And BYU, on the other hand, has one of the toughest schedules in the country, even as an independent. And this win is pretty big for them and their hopes of maybe making a New Year's Six Bowl.
Yeah, well, they got another big one this week, too. And this is good momentum. Hopefully, they're not too banged up from it. But maybe the start of another Big 12 rivalry game. Who knows? I'll be honest, I didn't get a chance to watch much of this game, if at any. But I'm going to try to make it a point to clue into this next week. We'll talk about that game, too, I'm sure. Because I want to see what's going on over at BYU, because they're knocking down walls once again. This is a big win for them.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what they can do this year. Like we mentioned, big game this week, the big game against Notre Dame. Play Arkansas later this year too. They've scheduled tough. So if they get to a point where maybe they're considered for the college football playoff, this is not like a UCF, like where UCF didn't really play anyone. This is like a legit schedule. So I'll be very happy if they win out maybe and get in, or if something happens and they get in.
Yeah, this is a Notre Dame type schedule when they make the playoff. There's no reason BYU should be left out.
Yep, absolutely. All right, well, let's get to our week 3 picks, and we're going to start it off with BYU. It is BYU at Oregon. Oregon has had their struggles, as we mentioned, when they got walloped by Georgia in week 1. But they settled down against Eastern Washington, a solid FCS program, and BYU coming off that big win. Let's see if they can do it again, Kyle.
Yeah, it feels risky to take BYU. I think – who is favored in this one? I can't remember.
I think Oregon by 3 was the last time I saw.
That's what I thought. Okay. I think Bo Nix settles down. They're at home. I think it's going to be big under the lights. And, you know, I got Oregon winning it. Kind of happy with whoever wins it, though. I mean, it's two exciting programs. I've always loved watching both of them. So.
Absolutely. I think Oregon in this game, something they couldn't do against Georgia. I think the first game speaks more to Georgia than Oregon, honestly. But in this game, I think they should be able to run the ball a little bit better, establish that offense. And their star linebackers should be able to do more as well. I mean, I don't think they'd be going up against the same offensive line that Georgia has, although BYU does have a couple draft prospects. I think Oregon wins it at home, and, you know, also kind of like an emotional, You get an emotional win in overtime. Tough late night Saturday game. Now you travel to Eugene. Afternoon game. You know, just tough schedule. So I'm glad they scheduled tough, but I'm going to go with Oregon in this one. Penn State and Auburn, they played last year. Now they're playing this year. This could be big for both programs as James Franklin has kind of cooled off at Penn State and Brian Harsin has kind of maybe been on the hot seat since he got to Auburn, it seems like. I don't know.
I was going to say, different temperatures here. They sweat one out against SJSU last week. So I've kind of been on this from the beginning of the season. I think Auburn's going to finish in the bottom of the West. I don't think they're very good this year. Last week kind of backed that up in my head. So I definitely have Penn State winning this one. Who is that? Sean Clifford in year 7, 8, whatever it is. I think he's ready for the challenge. I think Penn State has no problem. It's a tough place to play, but I think Penn State's got it. It's still going to be a good game. It's still going to be interesting for me.
I went back and forth on this one, man. I'm telling you. I think both these teams are, I don't know, not the greatest this year. I'm going to go with Auburn because they're at home. I'm going to be that simple about it. I think if they can run the ball with Tank Bigsby, they can maybe win. I'm not happy about that pick. I'm not happy if I picked Penn State either, honestly. This is a game that, like, maybe like 5 years ago everyone would be amped up for, and it is like a 3:30 CBS game, but it's going to be one of those, like, it might end up being a good game, but these teams are not the same as what they used to be.
It's a has-beens is what it is. Yeah, TJ Finley doesn't move the needle for me. That's what it really is. I mean, Clifford's been there. He's the veteran, experienced guy, and Finley's been awful this year. I mean, you can't win a game just by running the ball. That's the only reason I really kind of think Penn State. But like you said, these are two unimpressive teams at the moment. We'll see. Yeah. Penn State's ranked. Hey, what are we talking about?
Oh, they're ranked. Yeah, absolutely. It's crazy, but that little number by their name gets everyone else to pay attention a lot more. You know, that's how it goes.
That's why they're favored. Yeah.
Texas Tech at NC State. Kyle, we had talked about, I really like NC State this year, and we talked about how tough that first game was going to be. They almost blew it. They did not blow it, though, thanks to ECU missing field goals. But I think this is a chance for them to make sure they can win a decent game at home. And Texas Tech, you know, coming in on a 2-0 record, beating a ranked team at home, should be a good game.
Yeah, I'm going to chalk up that first game to a little bit of jitters, a little bit being just ECU. I mean, that's why I brought that up to you in the first place, was just because they've had a history there. It is a rivalry game. ECU's not, it's not the biggest stadium, but it's a tough place to play when you got the rivalry jitterbugs going in. But I think, you know, they lucked out, like you said. ECU kind of blew that game, coughed that away. Devin Leary's settled down, looked better. I think I'm still with you on this one. I think NC State's going to be the team to beat in the ACC. Behind Clemson, I think I'm still doing that. But yeah, I mean, I think this is a game that NC State should and will win.
I think so too. I think Devin Leary, as you said, got back on track, got some other players involved, some new receivers involved in that game against, I think, Charleston Southern of the FCS. And I think that defense is pretty nasty, so they should be able to slow down a backup quarterback for Texas Tech, and being at home, I think, helps a lot.
I would assume or hope that they figured out some kind of goal line offense, because I'm not watching that again. All right. Do something on the goal line.
Something different, yes.
God.
The ABC primetime game this week, a little bit weird one. Michigan State is traveling to Washington. Michigan State had the good year last year, but they lose Kenneth Walker. And Washington has Michael Penix coming in. Looked pretty good so far. You know, I played in Indiana for a couple years, kept on getting injured. They kind of decided to go in a different direction, so maybe some hope there.
Yeah, I'm a level with you. I don't know too much about either one of these teams. I watched a little bit of the Washington game week one. Honestly, wasn't very impressed. An experienced quarterback again with Michigan State. I guess technically so is the Indiana guy. I'm drawing a blank. You just said his name. But I think I've got Michigan State in this one too. Just haven't believed in Washington much. And you know, I like what Mel Tucker's doing up there. So
I'm going Washington. This is another game like – I don't know why this is a primetime game, but it is. So I'm going to go Washington. They're at home. Penix, I think, moves the needle a little bit. And Washington has a bunch of guys that have been hurt over the last couple of years on that defense, too, that I think help out. I do think Michigan State has a couple playmakers, but going across the country and playing Washington at home with that defense, I'll take the Huskies. Next one up, we have Miami Hurricanes traveling to Texas A&M. College Game Day was going to go to this game until Texas A&M blew it, and now College Game Day is going to Boone, North Carolina to see Appalachian State versus Troy because they didn't know what else to do on a kind of lackluster weekend of games in terms of big-time matchups. So good for them for supporting Appalachian State and doing that. But we have in this game, we have Texas A&M, who is very desperate for a win against a ranked Miami team who always wants to be back, and they had never quite been there other than that 1 year under Mark Richt where they had a pretty good season. And I don't know if we're jumping the gun on Miami here. I don't know if Texas A&M can bounce back from that awful performance. It's a lot of uncertainty here.
Yeah, all right, so real quick, because I did see that. Was it legitimately just because A&M lost? Like, they were slated to go to Kyle Field?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's just – brings a tear to your eye. I mean, that's just beautiful. No, I'm gonna hate myself for that. I think Texas A&M, I mean, I just don't think they make the same mistake back-to-back. I mean, yes, I was shitting on Jimbo a second ago, but, like, he is a great coach for a reason, like, in some eyes anyway. But, like, I think he gets them focused this week. I think he brings it back. I mean, they did beat Alabama last year, so it's not like he can't figure out how to win the big game. They can. I think they make some adjustments this week, and I think they take care of business. Like you said, I'm not really sold on Miami quite yet. Do love their running back, though. Great guy. but I think it's going to be a little rowdy over there at Kyle Field. Prime time, like you said, and I'm going to go with the Aggies.
Yeah, Jimbo has, like, one of the toughest jobs I've ever seen this week with the bad press that Texas A&M has gotten. Not just losing, but the yell video. He's got the freshman driving around the parking garage making, like a Grand Theft Auto. He's got, like, recruits who are freaking out. If you want to have the season people thought you could, which is probably gone by now, but if you want to have something similar to it, you have to win this game before you get SEC play. So I think Texas A&M is going to win because I think Miami's still a little bit farther away. I think Tyler Van Dyke is a pretty good quarterback who could expose them. But maybe another year under Mario Cristobal. It's his first year for him, first big road game. Either way, it'd be kind of funny to see Miami win this game, see the Hurricanes fans say Miami's back, see the Texas A&M people get memed more because the yell video was the dumbest thing I've ever seen in my life.
Is that the first time you've seen one?
No, I've seen them before, but that one was especially bad. Especially,
I don't even watch them anymore just because, like, it's so uncomfortable that, like, I feel nervous. Like, I'm embarrassed for myself, and I'm just watching the video. I don't even – it's so bad.
Yeah. But, yeah, I think they win. I'm going to take them, and if they don't win, then we'll have more to talk about next week. All right, the last one we're going to pick is Fresno State and USC. Now, Fresno went into overtime with Oregon State when they were at home last week. I do think Oregon State is a much better team than they are most years. They lost in overtime. They had a really good game against them, though. USC has looked good against pretty subpar competition. I would say this is the biggest game in the Lincoln Riley era through three games before they get into the Pac-12 schedule. And Fresno was a team that had eyes on a New Year's Six Bowl before the season. They might need to win this one if they want to do that.
I'm leaning USC. I just think Caleb Williams, I mean, there's just too much talent there, and Lincoln Riley is a good coach. I mean, I'm trusting in the USC product and everything this year. I think they're ranked too high. Like you said, they were a little close in those first couple of games. But, you know, it's a lot of new faces. I believe they were the number one in the transfer portal, correct?
I believe so, yeah.
So, I mean, and I only know about number two because that's my team, but, like, we haven't looked good either. So, I think it just takes time to kind of get everybody meshed and all on the same page. It's unfortunate that they're going to have to figure it out real quick now in week three. I love Jake Haner. Don't get me wrong. I think he's a great quarterback. I loved watching him last year. But I've got USC here in this one. And you touched on Oregon State, too. I got to say, I hope we get to talk about them later in the year because I've liked what I've seen out of them.
Yeah, destroyed Boise State week one, beat Fresno State on the road week two. They might – I mean, the Pac-12 North maybe looks like maybe there's no elite team because Oregon kind of fell, but there might be some teams behind them that could be making the Pac-12 championship.
I've seen some analysts look and list the Oregon State offensive line like top five, I think. And I was, like, shocked by that, but – I mean, it all starts with a good offensive line. If they actually have Oregon State's offensive line ranked that highly, like, they might be able to make a little noise in the Pac-12.
And don't forget, they have a turnover chainsaw, which is objectively the coolest turnover thing of all time. The turnover chain, you know, that's the first coolest one. Thing. That's cool. But the chainsaw, I mean, come on.
Can't beat that.
I think Oregon State is a team we will be talking about later. There's going to be a void in the Pac-12 North, so we'll get to them. I'm with you. I talked about Fresno State. I thought they were going to be the New Year's Six representative. I thought they might be able to beat Oregon State. They almost did, and then maybe lose to USC and then kind of go on their schedule. Still think they're going to have a really good year, but they schedule tough. They have Pac-12 teams on the schedule all the time. Jake Haner will have a big game. I would say this game will be close because I don't think USC has seen anything like this yet. And like you said, there's a lot of moving parts with those transfers. But I will say USC should win. They got Connor Williams at quarterback. They got Travis Dye running back. All these transfers. Lincoln Riley has proven to be a pretty good coach. We need to see if he can reach that like elite of the elite tier by winning a championship or you know going to the championship game first. But so far, so good at USC. I think they do beat Fresno and kind of go along their season. We'll see what their biggest competition for them is after that because it's probably still Utah even after they lost to Florida. All right, Kyle, those are all the picks for the week. Any final thoughts?
I got two.
Okay.
Is there any way Nebraska makes the Oklahoma game interesting again this year? They're at home this time.
You know, we always talk about or think about, like, after you fire a coach, does the team come out, like, more spirited? There's a little chance. I think there's a better chance than they had kept Scott Frost.
They have talent. I mean, there's talent on that team.
Yeah, Casey Thompson has looked good at times at quarterback. I think they had some guys playing out of position, like Ramir Johnson, the running back, ended up being like a slot receiver / running back. Like, they have guys. So, theoretically, they could. And it's honestly, Brent Venables, like, he's coming into a new situation. I don't think it's fair to expect that they're going to blow out every team. They're favored by 11 points in this game. So, it could be pretty close.
Yeah. And the number two, how many games does Kansas win this year?
I'm going to say four.
I believe they haven't won four in over a decade. I'd have to double check, but one of my friends is a Kansas fan, and I was like giving him shit. I'm pretty sure it's been three or less for over 10 years now.
Yeah.
And I know it's only been one conference game or less. I'm pretty sure. I'm more sure about that one, though. So, but 2-0, I mean, I can't remember the last time they started 2-0, and one of them is actually a team. So. No, but what I'm looking at their schedule here. They've got at Houston and versus Duke. What are we doing?
I know. They here's the thing. Duke, Kentucky, Kansas, and Syracuse, the basketball schools are all 2-0. What's going on here, man?
Oh, yeah, well, I guess there's that too. What's Syracuse doing? They blew out Louisville. I was shocked by that. Oh, man. But I mean, Kansas, can we schedule better? Going on the road to a good Group of Five team and then playing another Power Five team? I mean, I don't know.
Well, here's the thing.
Do yourself a favor. Make it a little easier.
If they end up beating Houston this weekend, just somehow, I mean, their spread isn't that crazy.
I mean, they shouldn't have beaten West Virginia, if we're being honest with what we thought about Kansas.
Oh, absolutely. If they beat Houston, they can beat Duke at home. Yeah. I think they can beat Iowa State at home. Iowa State's going to have a down year. It doesn't say anything about Matt Campbell and the Nebraska job. They just lost so much from their team. And then TCU, who's also projected to finish kind of near the bottom of the Big 12, they could be like 5 or 6-0. Yeah.
They might mess around and get ranked. I'm saying it. I'm going to say it. If that happens, I hope they go to game day at Oklahoma. That'd be great. But, like, yeah, there's a buzzsaw there at the end of the season. That's rough.
Well, let me tell you. I do the college football playoff bracketology. I do it every week. It's, you know, it's become more of a thing now that we have more teams in the playoff. But it is so fun to see these teams who are not very good historically rank high. Like, so if you base it off of just resume, I don't care that Alabama was ranked preseason number one. Throw that out the window. Like, you know, having Kentucky in the top 10 every couple of years because they beat Florida in week two. Kansas might, if they win this week, they beat win at Houston, they might creep into the top 12. I only do 12 teams. They might creep into the top 12 for me. Because resume-based, they beat West Virginia, who beat Pitt, and then they're going to beat Houston, who's a pretty good team too. I mean, honestly, yeah.
And I think they've got a good chance of beating Duke, a Duke team that beat a Big Ten team on the road last week. I mean, that's a good resume so far for Kansas.
For Kansas, yeah, absolutely.
Never say never. Could happen.
It could happen. I mean, I die for the days that Mark Mangino was on the sidelines and Todd Reesing was carving defenses up and Aqib Talib and Chris Harris were in that secondary and they almost went to the national championship that year.
2007, man. I think the world stopped working in 2007. Everyone says 2016. It was 2007.
Oh, best college football season of all time, and I would be so happy. We had, like, Matt Ryan as Boston College being top two.
There were so many random ranked teams. Hawaii was ranked that year. What was going on?
Kentucky beat LSU. LSU. Kentucky was top 10 at one point. Everyone, Missouri was good. Like, there was,
I think Marshall was ranked. It was everything.
Oh yeah,
it had it. Cal was top 3 or top 5 or something. It was amazing.
If we had a season like that now with the playoff structure, imagine ranking 14. Like, the national championship that year was Ohio State with one loss, which even back then, one loss teams, it was, you didn't always get into the playoff or the championship game. And then you had two loss LSU, who lost two overtime games. They didn't lose a game that happened in regulation. They lost two overtime games that day or that year. And you had all these teams who, like, Kansas, Missouri, and all these other teams who were in it to the last minute. The whole place.
And then it all fell apart in the final 2 weeks.
Oh, yeah. If the internet would burn down if something like that happened this year. And there's four teams.
We could have had Kansas or Missouri in the national championship game. That would have been the most memorable one of my childhood, I'm telling you.
Oh, yeah. And it's weird, like, looking back on that year, like, Kansas had some dudes. I just mentioned them. Missouri had, like, Jeremy Maclin and Chase Daniel. Was Chase Daniel the quarterback? I think Chase Daniel was the quarterback. He's been in the league forever.
That sounds right.
And they've had, you know, Kentucky had some guys who went to the NFL that year, too. Like, it's just a weird year of, like, just random teams just getting this talent, developing that talent, because they obviously weren't recruited that high, so.
Was that the Randall Cobb year for Kentucky?
No, that was even before Randall Cobb.
Okay.
It was Andre Woodson and...
That was Andre Woodson? I thought he was earlier.
No, he was that year.
Okay.
And they ended up being 7-5, but they beat LSU and helped create this havoc, so.
Yeah.
Much respect. All right, I don't have anything else, but anytime I could talk about 2007 college football year, if we ever have a pandemic again where, say, college football can't happen, I'm just going to go rewatch 2007 college football season because it'll entertain.
I might do that over the summer anyway. I mean, that's without college football, it might as well be a pandemic. We're not watching the Reds. You know?
That's true. All right, well, I don't have any final thoughts. We're going to be back next week, recapping week 3, previewing week 4, talking about any other moves on the coaching front, if anyone else decides to make an early season firing. For now, thanks for listening. We'll see everyone next week.